You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. This is a first for Ed Randall's Talking Baseball, actually, a guest live in the studio. He is a lifetime Cubs fan, third generation. Now, the interpretation of that misery is that means that misery has been passed down from generation to generation. He started here at MLB.com in 2005, and he is presently the director of project management. For a first-person account of the agony and the ecstasy of being a Cubs fan and having them in the World Series, we welcome to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball, Dan Von Baron. Great to have you.
Great to be here, Ed. I'm honored to always talk about the Cubs with you.
Tell me about your first memory of baseball.
It started very, very young age. I was born and raised in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and on weekends we got WGN broadcasts from Chicago. And I remember watching the Cubs in black and white on weekends through broadcasts from WGN, and Jack Brickhouse was one of my just one of those voices of growing up, and because the Cubs were the only, you know, the only major league team that we would see on television on a regular basis, I didn't know there were too many other teams out there. They kind of captured my heart and my fandom at a very early age, probably 5 or 6 years old. I've been a Cubs fan since the mid 60s.
Wow. First favorite baseball player?
Oh, that's a great it's a great question, because I was an infielder. I played infield through into high school, and it would be hard for me to pick. It was probably Santo, but Banks, Beckert, Kessinger, Santo, that Cubs infield of, you know, late 60s, early 70s. I just loved all those guys.
First time you went to Wrigley Field?
My first big league game was actually a White Sox game, I believe 1972-73. I saw the White Sox lose, and I watched the Oakland A's clinch the Western Division pennant against the White Sox in 72 or 73. And it was the old Comiskey, and I thought, wow, this is a crazy place. And about 2 years later, probably, I was 74, 75. I made it to Wrigley for the first time, and you know, there was just nothing like it. And I still
it's like going to the Holy Land.
It is very much like a church to me. It's like walking into church, and I have the same feeling today.
Except they don't behave like they do in church.
No, yeah. They
not at
not,
all.
They
yeah.
not behave well sometimes in certain parts of the of Wrigley Stadium. But it was
tell
an,
us about that
amazing
game
experience.
Remember,
you know, I. The Cubs lost. I remember that.
Shocking.
I know. I can't even remember a major players. And I remember just being so just so in love with the play. It was so green, and the ivy and the field and just the smell and the sounds of it were so amazing to me. Mid-70s, I'm trying to think. I can't remember a pitcher. But I just remember the whole experience. Actually, and you know what? Even walking up from the outside and standing under that Welcome to Wrigley Field sign, mm-hmm. Those were the things. And it's funny, the ballpark kind of captured my imagination more than being there for the first game. But I remember it was fantastic, and the Cubs lost.
And the Cubs
right,
lost.
Right, right.
I did a television show for a long time, also called Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing story, which I won't get into here because it takes too long. But Bill Murray came on my show.
Yeah.
Because from time to time we would have people on who were in the public eye,
yeah.
who were identified as baseball fans.
Yeah.
And so Bill Murray comes on my show, and he tells the story about the first time that he was driven with his brothers and sisters to Wrigley Field
right.
in the family station
right.
wagon.
Right.
And he said his father was a diabetic, and he always had to keep chuckles
right.
in the glove compartment,
right.
and
right.
the kids
right.
would eat his chuckles.
Right. Oh, that's hilarious.
But anyway, he said,
"Wow,
I get into the ballpark,
right.
and he said, My brother covers my eyes as we go up the stairs.
Right.
And he said, then he took his hands away and he said, I had never seen, as you just said, so much green in his life. Yeah. And he said, and of course with Murray, there's always got to be a tagline here. And he says, and the thing that was most amazing to me was, I thought the grass was black. I couldn't believe the grass was green because we used to watch the games on black and white TV.
And you know what? Maybe that's what was so striking was my earliest memories are watching them in black and white. And then when you
day games, them, all day games,
all day games. I, you know what? I don't think I saw. I don't think I've. I haven't seen a Cubs night game. It's probably only been a couple years ago. When I've been back to Chicago on weekends, I've only been to a Cubs night game probably once or twice in my whole life. Right. I still have only been to a couple of and how about that, right? You watched them during the day, they played during the day.
It's a way of life.
It was some of us still haven't changed.
The players would play baseball as members of the Chicago Cubs and then they could go to dinner.
Right. After the game. That's right.
Dan Van Baron, who works here with us at MLB.com, is my guest, a lifelong Cubs fan. When did you begin, I'm thinking for you, which is dangerous, when did you begin to think, this is the Hotel California, you can check out, but you cannot leave?
Right.
When did you begin to think, this is a nightmare, everybody else goes to the World Series but us?
1969. 1969. I remember I was 8 years old and I was following them every day. I had all the Cubs baseball cards and I remember, you know, we were getting ready to go back to school. It was August and that whole summer had been, you know, all my friends, the Cubs were going to the World Series. Cubs are going to the World Series. And I will never forget coming home or we used to get the paper in the evening. I'd come home after school and I'd wait for the paper. And it was down to seven, and then it was down to three, and then the Mets took them. And I remember thinking, I still remember the disappointment, but at the same time, I remember thinking, well, we'll get them next year. We'll get them next year.
Right.
And I remember in 1969 thinking that, and I've been saying that every year since then. So last year I went and saw them play the Mets here in New York. I saw those couple games, and again I kept thinking, you know, we'll get them next year.
Next year.
Right.
And the Mets not only just passed them in the standings.
Yeah.
They blew past them.
Right.
They won 100 games, the Mets did. They finished 8 games ahead of the Cubs. So they made up an aggregate of 17 games on a team that had four Hall of Famers, Banks and Sano and Billy Williams and Fergie Jenkins and a top rotation of Jenkins and Bill Hands and Kenny Holtzman.
It was a monumental collapse that at a very young age, I'd really never seen anything like it. And I still remember it even to this day. But at the same time, you know, I think my brother at the time was like, well, I'm a Cardinals fan. And I was like, how do you do that? You know, you don't just go.
Your parents make Cubs him lost. Sleep in the garage? What's the deal with that?
You know what? They accepted it. But I just thought, you know, okay, something bad just happened. But I can't wait till next year. They still got those four Hall of Famers, you know.
They got the Hall of Famers. They would say that every year in Brooklyn when the Dodgers were in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Wait till next year.
Right.
But it didn't happen in 1970, and it didn't happen in 71.
No.
And then those players went away.
Boy, and then they had a bad run there for a while, the Cubs. It was 70s and, boy, into the 80s was just not, you know, not good years. But we all, you know, from Bill Murray to everybody else, there's still so much Cubs love and people that, you know, that are Cubs fans. You never give up on them.
In the 70s, they had Jose Cardenal, who led the league in afro, right?
I remember his hair sticking out under his batting hat. I remember it.
He just like placed the helmet on top of the afro.
Yeah.
And he once missed a game because he said his eyelid was stuck open.
He couldn't sleep the night before, he said, and he couldn't play the game, right, because his eyelids were – I remember – now, that was – you know, I was getting to be a teenager then, but I remember reading that and thinking, how do you do that? I'd never heard of such a crazy thing.
Right. So all through the 70s, what was it? Jack Brickhouse said anybody can have a bad century.
Yeah,
you're on your way.
That's right.
But now it's the 80s, and now there's a glimmer of hope because Dallas Green is coming from Philadelphia. And look at what he did.
Yeah.
He got them in the World Series in 1980 for the first time since 1919, and he's totally in charge.
Yeah. And then he's some great players.
And then he steals Ryan Sandberg out of the Cubs system.
Yeah.
To bring him to a future Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Now it's looking good again.
It is.
And then they make the deal with Cleveland and they get Sutcliffe in and he pitches unconscious.
They got great.
Goes 16-1.
Yeah.
Now you got your hopes up.
Yeah. And
1984.
I remember it well because I moved to New York City the next year, 1985, and I remember thinking, well, this would be a great way. I was living in Minneapolis at the time, and I was about to move out east, but I thought this would be a great way to leave the Midwest and to put it behind me. I thought I'm going to walk away and watch the Cubs.
I'm washing my hands.
Go all the way. They're going to go all the way, and I'm going to take that championship and go out to the East Coast and think about how great it's been. But boy, I don't know if I would call. The promise. I do remember. I remember excitement, and I remember thinking this is going to be it. But I don't remember the collapse wasn't as great or as bad as 69. But still, I remember people. You know, the saying in my family is, it's never too late for the Cubs to blow it. You know, and I'll tell you something. Saturday night, I had my fingers crossed. The ninth inning against the Dodgers, one out, and I thought, four run lead. You know, it's never too late for the Cubs. I had fingers crossed everything, but they pulled it out. But 84 was a perfect example of that. I just watched so much promise and so many great players.
But 84 was. It's just a matter of days.
Yeah.
You're up 2-0, and then boom, it's over.
Yeah.
The Padres win 3 straight.
Right.
With 69, it's the drip. And it's a black cat.
A month in 69? 6 weeks?
It was about six weeks.
Yeah.
And then there's a story at Shea Stadium. A black cat appears on the field before the game looking at Ron Santo and then scampers off.
Right.
And I have gotten to know the wonderful Pete Flynn was the longtime groundskeeper at the Mets.
Yeah.
From the time that they opened Shea, Dan, in 64 till the time that they closed it after 08, that was the only black cat ever to appear on the field.
Of course, and it would have to be against the Cubs.
Of course it would be.
Right.
So, but back to your point, I said about washing your hands.
Yeah.
Did you contemplate when you moved east? I've done it. I can't do it anymore. I had people at the longtime fervent Boston Red Sox fans from the Northeast in their accents go, they did it to our fathers and now they're doing it to us.
And the Chicago accent would be, you know, not the Cubs. You know, they.
You think you're having a divorce?
It went through my head. I came to New York. I mean, the Yankees were such winners, you know, and the Mets had done it in 69. And in fact, I had only been in New York a little over a year. And that was the 86 year of the Mets, which was just, and I thought I'm living in a town of winners. You know, I should start rooting for the winners. And I just couldn't do it.
It's like changing religions.
Exactly.
How can you do it?
I couldn't change religions, and that church that I went into and saw my first game in the 70s. I couldn't walk away from that church and never will. I've stuck by them. I'll wear my Cubs hat around town here, and I still love them. Yeah. Couldn't walk away.
Dan Van Baron of MLB.com with me on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Did you ever, through all of this, did you ever believe in the Billy Goat thing? And
I wouldn't call myself a superstitious person, although, like I said, Saturday night I had my fingers crossed, you know, but it just seemed like, here's the level of my superstition, 03, right? I knew after 20 some years of being a Cubs fan, when that ball went into left field and that guy, you know, didn't let Alou catch that foul ball, right? Bartman, right? I knew right then it was over.
Really?
I mean, there were still five outs left.
They're in the eighth inning. They're winning.
And it wasn't even the last game, right? It
was right. Game six.
So, and I knew San Francisco, but I knew. I stood up. I remember I said to my wife, I stood up and I said, that's it. It's over for the Cubs. So my point is I'm not superstitious, but at the same time, the black cat, the goat, Bartman, you know, when I'll see something like that, you know, I'll get this feeling like that's it, you know, it's done for them. And fortunately I keep thinking this year, okay, here's Kershaw coming back. This is it. You know, is this going to be it? Turns out so far this year, we haven't had our black cat. We haven't had our Billy Goat. We haven't had our Bartman.
103 wins.
Great team. But really, really great team.
I've always found it fascinating how from 1908 to now that they didn't back into one.
I know, right,
by accident.
Right, right.
You look at the Marlins.
Right.
Who just came on the block. The Arizona Diamondbacks.
Diamondbacks.
Get to the World Series in a matter of what, 4 years? And you think, through all the years and all the mismanagement, forget about the GOAT and all that other stuff.
No.
Obviously, the franchise was grossly mismanaged for generations.
Yep.
You would think at some point in time, they would at least get to a World Series.
And you know, you look right, 84, 03, you look at some of the great players that have been playing for the Cubs over the years and the great teams that they've put together, and you think, how did it happen to and I remember in 86 too, that really I kept thinking the Mets again, like how is that happening again, and the Cubs haven't done it once in 100 years. So it's just one of those things that we Cub fans sort of shake our heads at and wonder about.
How do you define the word dread?
You know, I think that's funny. That as a Cubs fan, that's just a part of your life. That's just something. And what's funny is you've been to Wrigley Field. You go to Wrigley. It's such a celebration.
Oh my goodness!
Even
it's like a
games,
frat house
even
in there.
After the games, whether they win or lose, there are people at Murphy's or at the Cubby. Everybody's drinking beer and singing "Sweet Caroline," even when they lose. So there is this sense of celebration, but at the same time, you know, you go into those games and you just wonder, how's it going to turn out?
You look at 2015, and they were gallant, and yet. Yes, they got swept by the Mets, but now there's all this promise for 2016.
Yeah.
Some had said, well, maybe they were a year ahead of schedule in 2015.
Right.
2016 is going to be their year. And you're looking at Chris Bryant, who's 24,
right.
and Baez is 23,
right.
And Addison Russell's 22, and Rizzo is so young that this is going to be the year.
I'm
but yet in the back of your mind.
Oh no, I got my fingers crossed, and I'm right. And you still watch every game. That little sense of dread, that little sense of what's going to go wrong. I don't know. It's never left me, and I'm not sure that it's not a part of like a lot of our Cub fans.
They scare you.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, and sometimes in a good way, you know. But there's always that little bit of that little bit of dread.
Have you ever wondered, and I'm sure you have through the years, what it would actually be like at that moment in time when they close the deal?
I have, and in fact, I've wondered about this a lot recently because Saturday night I cried. I was going to ask you
if they've ever made you cry.
Good and bad, yeah. But Saturday night, I you know, I wasn't sobbing, but I could not believe it. And I was just saying to myself, oh my God, this is the first time in my father's life. You know, my grandfather never lived to see them win a World Series. He claims that he heard them on the radio a couple times when they were in the World Series in the 30s or 40s. But I
it went actually, to 10 World Series right, in 40 years.
Isn't that crazy? So that's another thing, too. Why? How could they have not backed into one of those, right?
Right.
So I have this feeling, and I'm hoping that this is the year. And I've been thinking about it a lot the last few days. And I'm going to be at Wrigley Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Wow.
And the thought is in my mind. What I'm just wondering. I hope I don't self combust or something. You know, it really is in my mind. What if it is? And if it's not. We'll be back next year.
Yes, you will. Dan Van Baren with us from MLB.com in our remaining moments. HBO did a fantastic special on the Cubs. Forgive me. HBO did a fantastic special on the Red Sox and the curse.
Right.
Called Curse of the Bambino.
Right.
And then they, thanks to the New York Yankees, went out and won the World Series in 2004, and they re-edited the end of it and retitled it the Reverse of the Curse of the Bambino.
Right, right.
And towards the end of the show, there's all this video of people going to cemeteries and putting Cubs hats on the monuments, gravestones of their fathers and their uncles and their grandfathers and their grandmothers and their aunts and everybody else who lived and died with this team since 1919.
Yeah.
The same thing is going to happen with the Cubs, and maybe even bigger because your fan base is universal,
right,
like the Red Sox.
Yes,
they're Cubs fans every place.
That's true. It's true. It's an amazing thing, and it's part of what's kept me going back to the games and loving this team for my whole life is that thought of, you know, what's going to happen if it really happens. And it's a fantastic thing, not just about the Cubs. It's just a fantastic thing about the game and just about the city of Chicago and all of the fans all as you say, all around the world that love the Cubs. I did a lot of traveling in the early 90s for a job, and I was based in Hong Kong for a couple of years. And I have a picture of me in Tiananmen Square. I was up in Beijing working with my Cubs hat on. And I'll never forget walking out of Tiananmen Square and people in Beijing saying to me, Chicago Cubs, you know. And I was like, you know, we're going to get them, right? We'll see.
It's like when the Yankees signed Matsui.
Right.
And I said, it's not just about his ball playing. That's going to sell them millions of hats.
Oh.
People are going to walk around all over Tokyo with Yankee caps.
Everyone I know in Japan knows Matsui and love the Yankees. And same with Ichiro. You know, they love the Mariners and they loved Ichiro.
There was a movie that Robert Redford made some years ago called The Candidate.
Yeah.
And
a terrific movie,
a great political movie, and he wins his election.
Yeah.
And the very last scene, I think the last words in the movie are he's standing in the doorway at his hotel, and he goes, "Now what?"
Exactly. Yeah. And you know what? Now what for the Cubs? You mentioned the young players. You know, you mentioned the strength of the lineup and if I hope I'm saying to you next weekend, now what? And we come back. It would be an amazing thing for there to be such a long drought, and now Cubs fans are saying, well, we're going back again, right? Or we're going to do this again, right?
Sure,
we're
because of the youth of the team.
Yeah, they've got the talent, right?
They have one of the best managements in place.
Yeah.
They have a very supportive owner,
right?
And Theo Epstein.
Yeah.
Imagine being Theo Epstein to have done this in Boston,
right,
and now to go to Chicago and do this.
So he's the guy I could see as being the candidate. I can see him standing at the door of Wrigley saying, "Now what?" You know,
right.
I could see him saying that, and hopefully he's saying, "Now what? We're going to do it again."
No more tears for you.
I'm not. You know what? Next time, I hope it's just a little bit of joy. But yeah, no more tears. No more heartbreak. Yeah.
You've had a lifetime.
It's
of that.
Been great. It's been really great. I love them, and I'm glad I'm going to get to see them play. First person in my family to stand in Wrigley for a Chicago Cubs World Series game. So it's really going to be an honor. It's going to be really cool.
Leon Durham and Alex Gonzalez are now officially forgiven.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you know what? I almost said, Alex, who? Right. Hopefully we can start forgetting.
Blame it on Bartman.
Can start finishing.
Alex Gonzalez, yeah. Ground ball to his right, out of the glove, double play grounder.
And what was that? With Durham, that it get caught?
The ground ball.
It go under.
It went right through. Tim Flannery hit the ball and went right through his glove.
Well, yeah, no more of those.
After they hit one, and that was the other tease.
That's right.
First game, they win like 35-0, and Sutcliffe hits a home run.
Right.
We're going.
Right, exactly.
And then we win the second game. Yeah. And then you win the second game, and now it's we're going to San Diego. No problem. We only got to win one more game.
I remember, right.
Lee Smith and Steve Garvey. Boom! Oh, no!
I remember. Well, let's see. You know, last night was not the way I was hoping the series would start. I mean, the Indians looked really good, but hopefully we'll bounce back tonight and wrap things up maybe this weekend while I'm there. That would be something.
You got to be there.
I'm really honored, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a really special thing.
Hopefully one of the perks of working here at MLB.com.
Well, one of my best friends, a music writer, Rob Tannenbaum, said to me, anybody that can name the Cubs 69 infield without searching Google deserves to be at Wrigley this
weekend.
Well,
there you go.
So, Banks, Becker, Kessinger, Santo. I've known them since I was 8.
And their uniform numbers.
Oh, God. Oh, Banks was 3, right?
No, 14.
Oh, then, don't ask me numbers.
14, 18, 11, and 10.
Oh, man. Sorry. Ed, you are the man. Wait, 14, 11, 18, and 10.
Banks was 14, Beckett was 18, Kessinger was number 11, and
11.
Santo was 10.
Right, I was a shortstop, 11. I should have known at least.
Billy Williams was 26.
Right. Oh, Ed, I love talking baseball with you. You are just.
It gets me. It's no big deal.
That's fantastic.
It's no big deal.
That's fantastic.
What a joy to have you.
Likewise.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your day.
I hope
you don't get disciplined for taking time off here.
No.
So that'll do it for Dan Van Baron and myself on MLB.com. If you were on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.